You have already made the most important decision in your life so far. It was an intersection for you. We make decisions every day, but some of them can shape the entire course of our life. This podcast explores those decisions and their consequences. You choose to turn this way instead of that way. Why? Why did you make that choice? And what happened to you next? That's what I want to know. Welcome to Intersections. So I'm talking to Judith Huerta today. That's as close as I can get to your name. I'm sorry.
It's all good.
Most people know you as Judith.
Yes.
Because English speakers look at your name and they see Judith.
Judith, yes.
And Judith is a very kind of common English name
it
also.
It is. There are a lot of older women that have. I share the same name with a lot of older women.
Yeah. So I like to start off with an elevator pitch, Judith.
Okay.
What is your elevator pitch? You just stepped on an elevator. Somebody says, what do you do?
I usually do the questions, though, when I'm in the elevator talking to people. So I tell them, I ask them what they do, and they ask me the same question, and I tell them, oh, you know, I talk to people. They're like, really, what do you do? Well, I talk to people. And then I go into working with students, working with teachers, working with parents, and connecting them to resources to, you know, all of them working together. Mm-hmm. So you
do that for Oklahoma City Public Schools.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. You're also connected to an advocacy organization. Tell us a little bit about that.
So Dream Act Oklahoma was started in 2009. Mm-hmm. I jumped on board, and I was one of the folks that brought it over to Oklahoma City. In 2012. From there, some of the work that we do is organizing legal clinics for families that need to apply for deferred action for childhood arrivals. And then we've done some advocacy through stopping deportations.
Wow.
Yeah, that was, okay. That's a whole ordeal. And going and to the Capitol and mm-hmm. lobbying with mm-hmm. with folks. So
good. So you work with this advocacy group. Mm-hmm. You do a lot of different things. You mm-hmm. do phone campaigns. You go out to the Capitol sometimes. I know you were involved in a protest at a political campaign recently, weren't you? In fact, I was very kind of worried about you. I don't usually watch local news, mm-hmm. but I watched the local news that night, just basically going, is my friend Judith going to be okay? Is she okay at that? So tell us about that. It was out at the fairgrounds.
I wasn't planning on getting arrested that night. That was for other folks to do if it happened to get to that. Yeah. But, we organized a rally during Trump's first visit.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it was outside of he talked during the state fair, mm-hmm. and we were protesting outside, peacefully protesting outside.
Right.
I know there were a lot of community members that thought that ICE was going to be their Immigration and Customs Enforcement,
yeah.
and they didn't want to come out. But despite that, we had a couple teachers that invited their students in and encouraged them to come out. So then we also had some families that attended, and it was really nice.
Good. It was really nice.
Okay, so
everybody was really nice to everybody.
Nobody got hurt.
So that's what you define as being really nice, is just nobody got hurt, nobody got arrested, right?
So really nice to me means that the people that were present there,
yeah.
lost or were present despite the fear that they had.
Excellent.
So, and I'm right now, when I say that, I'm thinking about parents.
Right.
So on social media, there were rumors or things that were being stated that said that ICE was going to be there and they were going to pick up people. And
yeah.
But it was after hours. ICE has no business being there when mm-hmm. we're not doing.
Right.
Anyway,
and so they didn't.
They weren't there.
That,
they did not.
That was
there
just,
were police officers there,
yeah.
just keeping
right.
the peace.
Right.
Just
yeah.
So then there was the action that happened on the inside,
mm-hmm.
at the site where he was speaking,
mm-hmm.
and we had folks that went in with signs that said dump Trump and stop the hate, and they interrupted him while he was speaking, mm-hmm. and then they were escorted out, and there were some of the recent, not quite at the level that we've seen in these recent weeks with Trump's rallies.
Because at that point, that was still kind of a new thing.
Yes, it was.
For a group of mm-hmm. people to show up and protest at a Trump rally, yeah. wasn't it? So that was really kind of early in his campaign, mm-hmm. too, wasn't it?
Yes.
I think he thought Oklahoma was kind of easy pickings, probably, and he was probably right.
Yeah, there were folks that were ready to see him, but and us not so much.
Yeah. Did you get any kind of ugly comments from the crowd, or did the crowd in Oklahoma City treat you fairly well?
I think there were folks in particular that were right. kind of nasty with the group of protesters. Actually, some of the protesters that went were attorneys that were working with us. So it was really nice to see them being that active
right,
in the community and taking charge, because they're usually reserved and the ones that are backing us up.
Right.
But that was, that was exciting.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So, why would you be involved in that kind of an organization anyway?
So for me,
tell us a little bit about your cultural background.
Cultural background. So I was born in Mexico. Mm-hmm. I came to the U.S. or crawled under the fence into the U.S. when I was two, and we moved to California. Mm-hmm. So I was out there for most of my childhood, mm-hmm. and then we moved here to Oklahoma. My mom had some family here, so mm-hmm. I was raised in those streets, and people think that here it's like the crime is bad, and no, this is nothing here compared to
Southern California.
South Central LA. I lived on drug dealer street.
Right. Yeah. So you actually kind of spent your childhood years in South Central LA.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I came to Oklahoma, when I went to school, I remember this specifically, because I looked around and I was, where's all the color? I predominantly Mexican and Latinos and blacks in California. So
because you moved in here and you went to Putnam City schools,
yes.
right? Wow.
Big difference.
Yeah.
So
from Southern California to Putnam City schools.
Yes.
Which there are some people of color there, but not at the levels you were used to seeing in South Central LA, right?
Yeah, there was, I remember in middle school, there was one white boy. That's the only person we had.
Now we're not talking about Putnam City.
This is California.
California,
yes.
Right.
In California,
yeah,
yes.
Right. And so you come from that culture. That's a reason why you're involved in this Dream Act organization, mm-hmm. and all of that. Right.
So I was able to benefit from the 2-year work permit that Obama.
Yeah. Good.
Through his executive order established, and mm-hmm. yeah.
Okay. Good. So now what do you do for Oklahoma City Public Schools now? What are your kind of usual things that where people might see you?
So I work in the office. I work with parent complaints, like when they'll come to our office to mm-hmm. interpret for the entire building. we'll connect them to resources, right. for example, like health clinics and immigration related mm-hmm. stuff. Outside of the office, we're organizing events for students, mm-hmm. encouraging them to go to high school and creating spaces where they can ask questions about higher education specifically.
We're both
sneezing. It's a sneezing day.
Yes. Okay.
Specifically,
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Specifically for immigrant families who don't have resources to. Or don't have the knowledge that they can attend
right.
College.
So. Right. So your actual title with the school is?
Area Resource Coordinator.
Yeah.
Specifically with the ELL and
right.
community.
It's not a geographic area. It's a topic area.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. In other words, you cover ELL, meaning English
language
learners.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what else?
The community.
community.
So it tends, that lends itself more to the Latino community.
That sounds like one of those lines in a job description that says, and other duties.
And other duties. Yeah, that's it. Everything. That's just a little bit of everything. I'm everywhere. I'm running in the halls all the time, even though, you know, you're not supposed to.
but anyway, that's something you do. You do a lot of interpreting. You do a lot of not just language interpreting, but you help people understand the actual school system.
Yeah.
Right. It's a big school system. Mm-hmm. It's the biggest school system in the state.
Yeah,
so you help people understand just kind of the bureaucracy of the school.
Yeah.
And since you can speak their language, there's a little more trust. You put them at ease.
Yeah, they talk more when we speak their language. So actually, the example on that is we were organizing volunteers to interpret for parent-teacher conferences.
Yeah.
And we did it at a school where they don't usually have enough interpreters. So they're having to wait on one interpreter to run from one classroom to another to...
Yeah.
And it gets really hectic. So we ended up having it in the cafeteria. Everybody was together.
Yeah.
There was enough noise to where, you know, there wasn't that confidential privacy. We didn't break any rules that I know.
FERPA rules, yes, right? FERPA rules, okay.
And the parents were just very receptive and were asking all kinds of questions. So in a conference that would typically last 15 minutes, we were going into 30 minutes, 40 minutes.
Wow.
It was, yeah, they felt that comfortable with the interpreters being there, that they asked as many questions as they could about the kids.
And that ended up being very good for the school district, didn't it?
Yes, yes, yes.
Because people like...
They're excited to have it again.
People trust what they understand better, don't
they?
Yes,
very true.
If they're not sure that they really understand everything, they're distrustful, they might not approach. Yeah,
we have parents come later and say, well, I was told this and I was told that. It's like, well, then teachers tell them, well, you signed this form saying that you understood what I told you, when really they didn't understand what happened, what they signed. So it clears up a lot of stuff.
Good, good, good. Well, Judith, I wanted us to just kind of get a little bit about your background a little bit, so that people could kind of understand your answer to the key question, which is, what was the most important decision you ever made in your life to this point?
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking about that, and I was wondering the series of events that kind of led up to where I am now. Mm-hmm. I would say it was when I was in college, and I was working on my senior thesis. So before that, I had been rejected in several ways. Spaces. I was trying to do an internship with the Department of or DHS in photography. So I was going to be photographing some of the students that were going through the system, not students, some of the kiddos that were going through the system. And I was looking forward to that. That's what I studied, photography and Spanish.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And I was really looking forward to that, but I wasn't able to do it because I couldn't pass a background check because I didn't have a social security number. So then I ended up doing my internship somewhere else, but then that led to the senior thesis of photographing 200 people that supported the DREAM Act. And making a statement, but then that kind of led to, in trying to get those 200 people, it led to a car accident, and then that led to meeting folks that were part of the movement nationwide, and just like really testing limits on some of these rules we have, right? Some of these laws that we have. So from there, when I did that, I met up with this same group, and then we protested a detention center in Florida, and I got arrested.
So was that the biggest decision to really move into that group and really become an activist with that group?
Yes.
That was the decision?
To question, I think, is the decision was in 2012, because a lot of that stuff happened in 2012.
Right.
To learn to question what I was fighting for, or what I was, the reasons I was doing what I was doing, and how was that going to benefit me and my community.
That wasn't the way you were raised then, was it?
Yes and no. I've been thinking about that too. One of the things that when that car accident happened, I wasn't in very good terms with my dad, and when the accident happened, we started communicating again, and he essentially told me that the car accident was my fault because I was going to a place where I didn't need to be, and protesting and this and that. We're supposed to take care of ourselves, and the car should be used for going to work and taking care of your sister and taking care of the family.
Right, right.
Aside from that, you have no business doing anything else.
So your dad sounds like an essential family man.
Yes.
He's going to always think of the family first. So that was his first thought when he saw this is, you know, you're off doing this other thing.
I can't, I can't blame him for that because he really, I mean, we never starved. We always had, we always had shoes on our feet and clothes on our backs. And I really thank him for that. But then I decided to go a little beyond that in question, and I didn't think that was enough, especially when I have family members that were going through the same situation as I was, and I didn't want to see them go through that. Mm-hmm. So
there was a family connection there for you. It might not be very obvious, but you have other family members who the Dream Act and all of those issues would affect, right? Yeah. So there is a little more of a family connection than probably appears kind of on the face of it. Is that a tension right now that you see among other Hispanics out away from your own family of origin? Do you see that as kind of a struggle with Hispanics that they're reluctant? They might have very definite political views, but they're reluctant to really get out there and like go to a Trump rally or whatever. Because really it's like my job is to take care of my family. It's a hard life, to just come here with nothing. So you learn to just keep your mouth shut, work really hard, be an earnest person that other people can trust, and, not try not to offend anybody.
Which is how I was raised too. Cause when I was going to college, I didn't feel comfortable asking people questions about my status or what would result if I didn't have a social security number.
Yeah.
Like what could I do if I didn't have that? So now when I talk to students, I'm like, you need to question this. You need to tell them that this is happening. There's no reason why they should report you to ICE. No, you have a right to be here. You have a right to this education and you can get there.
Yeah.
So, I think it, questioning and changing my perspectives. I think it also helped hearing other people's stories.
Yeah.
Especially when I was doing the working on that senior thesis where I was photographing individuals, and that series of stories helped with the getting more wrapped into the organization.
How did your mind begin to change as you heard one story after another from activists? People who were activists, they were from your same culture, but they were activists, which is really kind of...
Mm-hmm. So I remember a space where there were over 400 individuals that were undocumented, and it was the first space where I had felt very comfortable and inspired. And when these types of events happens, I try to encourage other individuals to go so that they can feel like they're not alone. I mean, they see me and they see one person that's doing it, but that's not enough. They need to be in a space where they see so many other people doing it that it's impossible for them not to do it.
Right. Yeah. It sounds like when you were in high school in Putnam City, and of course Putnam City has had some Hispanics along the way, so you were not completely alone.
No.
But certainly it was nothing. It was a big contrast from South Central LA, where you looked like most everybody else there, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah. It was very different.
Either you were black or you're Hispanic, and that's pretty much the story. I know a guy that actually grew up in South Central LA, black guy that grew up in South Central LA, and so I've heard him talk about that some too. So you went to Putnam City High School though. Sounds like you know, it sounds like that senior project where you're around all of those activists, mm-hmm. you know, you talk about feeling at home. So, like, my mind just kind of rolls that around and goes, well, so you might not have felt very comfortable in your high school years, mm-hmm. even though you're one of these kind of people that probably just get along with about anybody if you want to.
I became one of those people.
Well,
yes,
you became.
I wasn't.
Okay, but you became one of those people. Why?
I think just the space, the people that welcomed me into the school. Uh-huh. And see, so the senior thesis was in college, not...
Right, okay, yeah, not okay. In high school. Yeah.
So I think the principal, and I like to name him because I wrote a poem about him, just thanking him for the... Uh-huh. Welcoming me uh-huh. into the school.
Right.
I was sitting in the cafeteria, what was the new cafeteria known yeah. there at the time, and I was sitting by myself in a table, and folks would come up and take chairs without really asking if someone was sitting there, so they would just, all right, I would just watch them. That's kind of rude, but okay. Uh-huh. So then he came up to me, Dr. Wentroth.
Dr. Winter, yes. Okay, right. And I actually used to know him.
Used to know him.
I haven't seen him in years. Now.
He's at Bethany, right? He's at Bethany.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So he came up to me, and he's like, "Are you new?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he's like, "I'm going to find you some friends."
That sounds like him. He actually came in from a middle school mm-hmm. that had many people of color.
Mm-hmm.
So coming to Putnam City High School then, that was no big deal.
All too natural for him.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually first got acquainted to him with him when he was at the middle school there on 23rd Street. What's the name of that again?
The middle school on 23rd and Taft.
No, not Taft.
Taft
no.
and May? I mean,
no,
sorry.
I'm thinking about Putnam City.
23rd? Oh, middle school. I don't know.
Oh, well.
That's all right.
Anyway,
we'll think about it later.
I first got to know him when he was a middle school principal,
mm-hmm.
and he was that same kind of person mm-hmm. in his middle school. He probably developed. Well, actually, he was. I think he's a former elementary school teacher, and so he's accustomed to reaching out to people, mm-hmm. connecting mm-hmm. people who might be reluctant. So he just kind of sensed that you were going, wow, what am I doing here, right?
So when he came up to me and he said that, and he went away to go find me some friends, I was like, yeah, I'm going to be done by the time he comes back. So I was trying to finish up my food very quickly. And
mm-hmm. So
and
what happened?
He came back before I finished, and he sat me down with a group of girls.
Yeah.
And he introduced me, and from there, it was just...
Were they cool?
They were really cool. Yes, a group of Latinas, and uh-huh. I was able to speak with them and feel a little comfortable or more welcomed. And then mm-hmm. it just, yeah, downhill from there, just talking to folks became so much easier after that moment. So.
It really is important to have somebody who you think understands you from the mm-hmm. get-go, isn't it?
Very true, yes.
Right. Is that one of the advantages? One of the advantages to Hispanics being in Oklahoma City schools, because there are larger numbers of Hispanics in Oklahoma City schools than there are maybe in some neighboring school districts?
I wouldn't say so much there's a difference in being in any particular school. Mm-hmm. I think is having a person that you can relate with.
Right.
So, or having someone that is welcoming you into a space where you don't feel comfortable.
Right.
So
right.
That's something that we try to do when I'm working with parents in the office or when I'm working with them outside the office, mm-hmm. just like getting to know them. What do you like? What can I talk about that will make you feel comfortable enough for you to start actually chatting with me? Because nobody's really quiet. I mean, introverts, but they like to talk about things. It's just finding right. the right thing that they want to talk
yeah.
about.
Yeah, yeah. And certainly with your background, you really have a certain measure of compassion for people who are just recently arrived, mm-hmm. don't you?
Yes.
And maybe even some Hispanics have been here for two or three generations mm-hmm. may not have quite the compassion sometimes, mightn't they? Because they...
No.
Yeah, they've really kind of forgotten what that was like.
Yes, yeah. And that's something that I was listening to last night in a... a speech that President Obama gave, is that people seem to forget, several generations after, people forget where they came from. And
yeah,
I hope I don't get to that point. I hope someone slaps me in the head when they see me going in that direction. Really. I give you permission to do that, actually.
Well, I won't. You'll have to count on somebody else. I can't.
I have a couple other folks that would be willing to
smack me. Yeah, there's just no way I would be the one who would accept that job.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm not. I might say, hey, remember me?
Yes. Okay, that worked. That might work.
No slapping.
Actually, I might need a smack. No, okay. I won't give you that job.
Yeah. You'll have to find somebody else to do
that. Sounds good.
I don't think I could ever smack you. So where are you now with things? Okay, we kind of talked about your past. We talked about that big decision you made in college.
Mm-hmm.
That really was kind of a moment, wasn't it?
It was.
If you had a Social Security number, what would you have done differently right at that point?
I don't know. I think I would have done the photography job, and I think I would be more into photography now than what I am at this point. Mm-hmm. But I am where I am because of the things that happened, and I don't know.
Well, it doesn't sound like you have any regret.
I don't, like you are
happy with where you are now.
I finally reached that point. I mean, everybody has these, they question where they are, and I was doing that for a while, but then, and I told my boss this the other day, I went in for an interview at a health facility, or folks that collected organs collected organs. And I was doing the interview, and when I was interviewing, they were asking me questions about the people that I work with, and my coworkers and the students that I work for. So then while I was giving them my answer, I was thinking, you know what? I really do love my job. I really do love what I do.
Yeah.
I have the privilege of working with students and influencing them and influencing teachers and influencing parents. And I have the privilege of doing that. Like, who else gets to do that, really? So then I walked out of that interview and I was just, you know, I'm done. All right. I didn't say anything else, but once I got back to work, I think that was where I was. I mean, I felt good again.
So that helped you realize you really are in place.
So
this is your place.
Something that I learned in photography and the art classes that I was taking is we get so focused on what we're working on that we don't take the time to step back and look at the bigger picture.
Yeah.
And that's something that I did at that point. It's like I was just so focused on all the things that I didn't like to do that I wasn't focusing on the bigger picture.
Wow. That's a great learning.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And I've had to do that several times with several scenarios. So.
Oh, yeah. I've been doing that all of my adult life.
I'm trying to be better about it.
It happens over and over again. Yeah. So what do you think comes next for you now?
So right now, I think I was planning law school for a while, mm-hmm. and I'm putting that on pause mm-hmm. for the time being because I feel like there's other things that I'm being very interested in, mm-hmm. Like psychology, and I want to make sure I make the decision that that's for real or for certain what I want to do before I move into, you know, having to pay for
yes.
So, yeah.
That's great. That's great.
Work and trying to get this house and then school after. So
you're still kind of getting settled in some
yes,
ways.
Yes, I am. Yeah. Establishing roots in Oklahoma.
That's actually hard to do, isn't it?
I always thought I would be leaving because I like being around a beach.
Right.
And I'm here. I like to plan, but I know that things change often. Right. And
mm-hmm. This is where you're connected, isn't it?
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, this is your place. This is where you're connected.
Oh, that sounds so weird. Hearing you say that sounds weird, but you're right.
Yeah. It is kind of surprising where we end up feeling connected, mm-hmm. doesn't it?
Yes.
And why and how. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you're very much in place here, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, it is. I'm really glad about that too. All right, Judith Huerta, glad to have you on the podcast, and much luck to you. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what you do next with your life.
I'm looking forward to that too.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
That concludes our interview. There are several ways for you to catch this weekly podcast. Go to our website at intersectionsok.com, where you can subscribe, listen to episodes, read the backstory, and see photos of our guest. On iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and our Facebook page, we are Intersections Oklahoma. On Twitter and Instagram, we are Intersections OK. I always want to hear about the cool people in your life, so write to me. My email address is ideas@intersectionsok.com. Steven Tyler is our awesome production advisor, and I am your host, Brett Dickerson.